This is Monitor 68 on February 24th. I'm your host, Ted Steele. Few bachelors this morning. Thursday is February 29th. Yeah, leap year day. Now, that's the day you come out of your lair, and if you see a shadow, go back in, my friend. It's probably Sadie Hawkins.
See it now.
On stage, star performances recorded live in leading theaters and nightclubs all across the country. Here's comedian George Carlin as he entertained the customers at the Rooster Tail in Detroit with this routine about the Indian sergeant talking to his men.
All right, all the tall guys over by the trees. Fat guys down behind the rocks. You with the beads, out of line, come on. Boy, there's one in every village. All right, knock off the horse, play. Come on, knock off the horseplay. You guys over there playing with the horse, will you knock it off? He's all been given a piece of birch bark and a feather dipped in eagle's blood. We want you to write on the birch bark with the feather in the upper right-hand corner. That's the upper right-hand corner. That's your arrow hand. You write your name, last name first name last. Your name is Running Bear, you write Bear Running. You got a middle initial, please include that, such as Wolf, Howling W. A lot of you guys have been asking me about promotion. You'd like to make Brave Second Class. Get another scar up on your arm. Well, I'm happy to say the results of your early tests have come true. You're doing beautifully. Burning settlers' homes, everybody passed. Imitating a coyote, everybody passed. Sneaking quietly through the woods, everybody passed, except Limping Ox. However, Limping Ox is being fitted with a pair of corrective moccasins. And he'll be up and dancing in no time at all. There'll be a massacre tonight at 9 o'clock. We'll meet down by the bonfire, dance around a little, and move out. This will be the fourth straight night we've attacked the fort. However, tonight it will not be as easy. Tonight there will be soldiers in the fort. Happy to say I'll be leading the massacre. I'll be running down front. You'll see me. I'm the one that's on fire. And the uniform of the day, it's a formal massacre. You want your Class A summer loincloth. Two green stripes over the eye, no feather. Arms are blue, legs are red, chest is optional. You might throw a little yellow on the bellies. No, you can't put any purple on your eyelids. Ain't you the guy with the beads? Get out of line with the beads,
brother. Monitor on stage with a performance by George Carlin. We'll hear an interview with that same bright young comedian later in this half hour.
And I wake up in the morning with my hair down in my eyes, and she says hi. And I stumble to the breakfast table while the kids are going off to school. Goodbye. And she reaches out and takes my hand and squeezes it and says, how you feeling, hon? And I look across at smiling lips that warm my heart and see my morning sun. And if that's not loving me, then all I've got to say, God didn't make me green apples, and it don't rain in Indianapolis in the summertime. No such thing as Dr. Seuss or Disneyland, and Mother Goose is no nursery rhyme. God didn't make me little green apples, and it don't rain in Indianapolis in the summertime. And when myself is feeling low, I think about her face growing ease on my mind. Sometimes I call her up at home, knowing she's busy, and ask her if she can get away and meet me. Maybe we can grab a bite to eat. And she drops what she's done and she hurries down to meet me, and I'm always late. She sits waiting patiently and smiles when she first sees me, 'cause she's made that way. And if that ain't loving me, then all I've got to say, God didn't make little green apples, it don't sow in Minneapolis when the winter comes. No such thing as make-believe, puppet dolls, palm leaves, and BB guns. God didn't make little green apples.
The very clever Roger Miller and Little Green Apples, just as sure as you're on the Monitor Beacon.
Can a small business conference find happiness at a hotel famous for the biggest conventions in New York City? Here at the New York Hilton, New York's newest, most modern skyscraper hotel, small conference groups will find hospitality suites perfect for luncheons, testimonial dinners, sales presentations, any business meeting at all. And for any size conference you require, there's the Trianon Ballroom, for example, designed for the smaller, more elegant affair, and an entire floor of meeting rooms and exhibit halls which can be combined or divided with the unique and easy flexibility characteristic of the New York Hilton. Our staff of seasoned professionals, the audiovisual capabilities, lighting and service facilities are unmatched in New York. The handsome modern guest rooms all have panoramic picture windows, TV, radio, automatic ice makers, and automatic message service. And along the promenade, you can enjoy dining at any of the many famous, fabulous international restaurants. Even the smallest conferences can make it big at New York Hilton. Call Al Cox, Director of Sales, New York Hilton, at area code 212-JUDSON-67000. That's 212-JUDSON-67000.
Monitor New York. WNBC, New York.
And keep in tune with Carol Lawrence as she sings It's Enough to Make a Lady Fall in Love on Monitor.
A single life is a lonely game. No one to pet and no one to tame. No one to quarrel with and no one to blame. It's enough to make a lady fall in love. The single life is no life at all. The years hurry by, the days nearly crawl. And though that awful mirror, mirror on the wall, it's enough to make a lady fall in love. It's so utterly ghastly, beastly when your life all famine, love, and peacefully and you live. But all nunnally and so priestly, it's a cry of gloom and shy. A single life is insomnia. You talk all night, you let your fancy play. How long can fancy play without a fiancé or a nuptial moon above? It's enough to make a girl get married. It's enough to make a lady fall in love. It's enough to make a lady fall in love. It's so utterly ghastly, beastly when your life all famine without the beastly and you live so nunnally and so freely. It's a crime of bloom and chime. A single life is insomnia. You talk all night, you let your fancy play. But how long can fancy play without a fiancé or a nuptial moon above? It's enough to make a lady. It's enough to make a lady. More than enough to make a lady fall in love.
You heard comedian George Carlin perform just a few minutes ago on Monitor. You've probably also seen him on television on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, or last summer when he did a summer replacement show for Jackie Gleason called Away We Go. He has that assignment again for this coming summer. He was interviewed in Hartford, Connecticut by Monitor reporter Frank Knight.
We have a very funny young man named George Carlin, who certainly is no stranger to a microphone. Put a turntable at his right hand, another one at his left hand, and he's at home. A former disc jockey, is that right, George?
Right. Formerly with KJO in Shreveport. I worked in Boston a while, and Fort Worth, and finally out in Hollywood.
What were you before you were a disc jockey?
I was a youth. I began disc jockeying when I was 18. I quit high school in first year and bummed around New York for about a year, you know, as a youngster, until I was old enough to be in the service, where I finished up all of the educational shtick and got some radio experience and took care of Uncle Sam for a while.
George Carlin, a high school dropout?
Yes, indeed.
That sounds impossible because your material has been termed by critics to be the most imaginative as well as the most hilarious of any young comic today.
Well, thank you. I must thank them, too. You know, dropping out of high school really has nothing to do with what you can achieve eventually. There are many reasons for dropping out. In the ghettos, they drop out for one reason. Many people drop out because they're not getting anything from it, and their mind is just working so much, you've got to be out on your own. You can't stand there and put up with that ridiculous regimentation just because it is traditional. You have to go out and do it yourself. Some people quit for that reason.
Would you call yourself a rebel?
Absolutely. I don't like to call myself anything, quote, unquote. But if there's a word that's near being fair, I guess that's it, because I like to see a lot of things changed.
How did you get into this comedy routine? Were you funny on these various radio stations? Were you a so-called radio personality?
Yes, and that stemmed from my early tendencies. As a child, I was the funny kid on the corner. I was the wise guy in class. Again, a sign of not being able to fit in with the routine. I like to do impressions of the teachers, impressions of my neighbors and my friends' mothers and fathers, and it was just always there. It was a matter of how long it would take to bring it into its best form.
George Carlin, I have watched you on television break up some pretty good men. Johnny Carson, as a matter of fact, I was watching him just the other night, and he fell off his chair when you came out on stage.
I don't think it was quite when I came out. I didn't check my suit that night. When Johnny goes off the chair, that's kind of a status symbol among comedians who work that show. And you just hope that they get a camera shot of it. Because it's funny, the industry, the people in show business who judge you, they go by Johnny. If you've been on Carson, the remark you'll hear the next day is, oh, Johnny loved him. Johnny really loved him. Not how well did he do. How well did Johnny like him? So you try to get Johnny if you can.
Your routines are really hilarious, and most of them are based on things which happen in radio. For instance, you have a routine, which, by the way, are comedy classics these days, like the Hippy Dippy Weatherman, that, W-I-N-O, very funny, takeoff on the top 40 DJs. And you have takeoffs on commercials, too, TV commercials. These are all hilarious, all original material, and all material which critics are applauding.
Well, they're all things that are based in the art and science of communications. All of my routines are based on either television or radio, in some cases even newspapers or books, movies, always communication. This is the most important word next to consideration, the most important word in the world, and nobody's using it. Nobody is saying anything, and those who are not being heard, and it's just natural for me to want to spoof this great art and science, as I say, that doesn't work.
George Carlin, you've got to give us the sign-off of one of your DJs for this interview. Would you mind?
We got the old tunes, the new tunes, the show tunes, the blue tunes, the greatest music in town. They never play it.
The part of the disc jockey was played by George Carlin. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely deliberate.
What will you do if I sang out of tune?
Would you stand up and talk to me?
Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song, and I'll try not to sing out of key.
Oh, I get bored with the help on my back.
Oh, I get high with the help on my back.
Oh, I get a child with the help on my back.
What do I do when my love is away?
Does it worry you to be alone?
How do I feel by the end of the day?
Are you sad because you're on your own? Oh, I get bored with the help on my back.
Oh, I get high.
Sergio Mendes and that Brazil sound playing with a little help from my friends. And their friends in Rio de Janeiro are celebrating Carnival beginning today until Shrove Tuesday the 26th. Wish we were there.
Hello,
Crew Generation and theme from Moulin Rouge. In Helena, Montana, we're heard on KBLL, the station serving the area between Yellowstone and Glacier Park. Wherever you listen, stay with us. This is Ted Steele for Monitor, back shortly.
Don't go away, there's more to come, more to interest everyone. Just stay tuned, we'll be back soon with Monitor.
Want to know how to survive New York's cold winter nights? Join me, Brad Crandall, in Heated Debate, Monday through Friday from 9 to midnight on WNBC. I think you'll enjoy the atmosphere.
Monitor New York, your weekend sound on WNBC, New York.
Monitor, noting the news and hairstyles for ladies. Corkscrew curls that look like wood shavings. Isn't that nice, huh? Run your fingers through her hair and you get splinters. Music, please. It's Bob Goulet in The Happy Time.
Remember a Christmas morning long ago. The frosted glass, the dancing snow, the happy time. Remember the painted horse, the carousel, the chocolate kiss, the caramel, the happy time. Remember a pale pink sky, your first Easter hat. And if you should ask me why, the reason I ask you this is that I want to remember you remembering the happy time. Remember the day you found the dollar bill, a roller skating down the hill, the happy time. Remember the compliments you once received, the lie you told, they all believe, the happy time. Remember your first school play, the sound of applause. Why do I go on this way? I'm only reminding you because I want to remember you remembering the happy time. Remember the tulip trees you walked among. The game was old, the player young, the happy time. Remember a long deep sigh, a tentative kiss. And if you should ask me why, the reason I ask you that is this: I'm longing to see you smile and hear you laugh, so I can have the photograph and remember you remembering the happy time.
Caravan on Monitor by Bert Caffert.
Thank you. It's 9:10, it's 68. Your weekend companion keeps you up to date.
Monitor, and in this half hour, you'll hear about one of the most famous ladies of the evening of all time. She was known as La Belle Otero. You'll also hear about the music of the younger generation just 2.5 minutes from now. We'll start off with an illustration of that sound. It's the Arbors, and that's the way it is.
That's the way it is.
Monitor's weekly report on this younger generation with Linda Sutter.
From the first success of the Beatles in 1963 until now, with such groups as Jefferson Airplane and the Doors, rock and roll has undergone quite a transformation, not only in the way it sounds, but in the way people think of it. 4 years ago, this music was generally disregarded by most adults, who thought of it as rather irritating noise of no more consequence than as their children's entertainment. Now it's most everyone's entertainment, and more. It's this younger generation's most effective means of expressing itself. And more people come to think of it as serious music of considerable significance. How has this transformation come about? Paul Williams is the most appropriate person to answer this, I think. At 19 years old, he's the founder and editor of Crawdaddy, a magazine devoted to the study of rock and roll. What does Crawdaddy mean?
That doesn't mean anything. It's the name of a club in England, which is now defunct, where the Rolling Stones and the Yardbirds got their start. And it's a word from American folklore, and it sounds nice.
Do you think rock and roll is significant music? Some people say that it is the means by which members of this younger generation express themselves, by which they communicate through the generation gap. Do you think that that's fair to say?
Well, it's certainly the means by which the musicians express themselves. To listen to anything or to be involved in any kind of communication, even on an audience end, I think is also to express yourself to some extent. But I wouldn't want to phrase it in terms of putting out messages or, you know, in terms of a generation gap and telling people if you want to understand, you can find it in rock and roll. Because I don't think it's anything that explicit.
Do most of these groups write their own music?
At this point, a great many of them.
Which of the groups do you think are the best?
The very best groups, to my mind, are the Rolling Stones. This is the music which most often reaches me. The other groups I'd name would be the Byrds. Very definitely the most immediately communicative group are the Byrds. They have complete control of all that music, all the things they're working with, and they say very direct things, very beautifully. You relate directly to what the music is there. The Beach Boys, Brian Wilson, the leader of this group, may be the most creative person in the whole music scene. Certainly has the most potential of anybody I've ever met, create within any medium, a true genius. The Kinks, The Who, Bob Dylan, of course, Smokey Robinson and the Miracles.
What about the Beatles?
The Beatles, you can immediately see that I haven't listed. This is not because they're not great, but because everybody knows about them. And because what the Beatles do is on a very immediate level. The first thing that you discover when you get into rock and roll is the Beatles, and the first thing that moves you. And what the Beatles do very simply is they take everything that they see, you know, everything that's in the world, and they transform it immediately into music. There's not very much emotional content in the Beatles. The Beatles are the great translators. The Beatles can't do anything, no matter how freaky it seems, without making it palatable. And it's like the first step in getting involved in this music. I don't think it's an end in itself.
We've been talking with Paul Williams, editor of Crawdaddy magazine. With names like Jefferson Airplane and Peanut Butter Conspiracy, certainly it's very hard to stop at names. They provoke you, and you want to listen. This is Linda Sutter, reporting for This Younger Generation on Monitor.
Here are two fellows who are popular with the younger generation, Simon and Garfunkel. It's their latest, Scarborough Fair.
Are you coming to Scarborough Fair? Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. Remember me to who is there. She once was.
our song.
Here comes Mara, Monitor.
With Petula Clark in 1 minute on the Monitor Beacon.
Shanghai, Macau, Hong Kong, New York. A sizable distance, even with 1967 methods of travel. But in addition to the mileage, an even longer journey was made by a little Chinese boy with a congenital heart defect. From invalidism to health, through advanced surgical treatment in a United Hospital Fund member hospital here in New York. No such long trips are necessary for you. To take advantage of the priceless benefits modern medicine provides in New York's voluntary hospitals, give to the United Hospital Fund of New York, 3 East 54th Street, New York City.
My name is Long John Neville, and I have a question for you. What's the shortest distance between two points of view? The answer, straight line. My early morning telephone show. So, if you have an opinion or a question, call and add to the outgoing sound of the incoming calls on Straight Line, the Long John Neville telephone show, mornings. That's right, mornings from 5 to 6, right here on WNBC.
Monitor, New York. WNBC, New York. Petula Clark on Monitor with Kiss Me Goodbye.
We choose it, win or lose it. Love is never quite the same.
Lady of ill repute is the subject of a book by Arthur Lewis. The lady was once described by the entertainer Maurice Chevalier as the most dangerous woman of her time. Reporter Betty Grobley questioned the author of La Belle Otero's biography, Arthur Lewis.
Why was she so dangerous?
She could get any man she wanted to. She could get him to leave his family, leave his job, embezzle, and when she rejected him, she could get him to commit suicide.
Now, is this La Belle Otero, is she well known in the United States? I've never heard of her.
Not in the United States, but in Europe, particularly in France. If you mention her name, you get raised eyebrows and sighs of longing and regret, even from people who never knew her, because she was old when she died. Her era was 1890 to 1914, but they remember her very, very well in France.
Now, tell us who she was.
She was probably the most expensive lady of the evening in history. Her fees were $10,000 a night, and she got them. She was born of very, very poor parentage in northwestern part of Spain. She was one of eight illegitimate children, each with a different and unknown father. When she was 11, she was molested by a village shoemaker, and she wandered through. After spending a year in a hospital, she was very dangerously hurt, seriously hurt. She spent a year in a hospital and then traveled around Spain and southern France, teenager, really, 12, 13, 14 years old, living with any man who would buy her food and give her a bed to sleep in. And then when she was about 17, she was discovered by an American impresario who was in Europe getting acts for his New York Music Hall. He fell in love with her very desperately. Got some people to teach her to dance and to sing as well as she could. She didn't have very much talent. And brought her to New York for a real ticker-tape welcome in 1890 when she made her debut. The critics thought she was terrible, but the audiences were mad about her. Of course, actually, she used her stage performances only to solicit, so that people would know her. But she attracted the people of her day, the great and the rich. Tsar Nicholas I of Russia was one of her lovers. Grand Duke Nikolai Nikolovich, Kaiser Wilhelm.
One of the Vanderbilts?
One of the Vanderbilts. I think we had only one Philadelphian, a gentleman named Elkins, otherwise unidentified, but let's say.
Now, in doing the research for this, Arthur, for your book, La Belle Otero, you met her. Not only did I not know that she ever lived, but I wasn't aware that she just died recently.
Yes, I met her. In 1963, my wife and I were over. This is strictly a vacation. This is not the kind of research you do with your wife. We were on a vacation. I met a friend of mine who's a Parisian newspaper man, and he said, you know, there's a great story going to be written someday about La Belle Otero. She's 95 now. Why don't you go down and talk to her while she's still alive? I went down to Nice and spent some time with her. Got a lot of material. We went over her scrapbooks. And
she was how old?
She was then 95. She was amazing, amazing, and complete. Had all her faculties, sharp, witty, vulgar, funny, ribald, everything. And then in 1967, my wife picked up a copy of Time and said, look, La Belle Otero's dead. Now's the time to do the book. I wouldn't have done it while she was alive.
How much do you suppose she made in her lifetime, Arthur Lewis?
It's fairly hard to estimate, but she certainly made no less than $15 million and perhaps as much as $25
million. What happened to it?
She lost it all in gambling. She lost...
Compulsive gambling?
Oh, she was a compulsive gambler. Monaco, at the big casino there. She was known to have lost as much as $1 million a night. And somebody said to her once, what do you like best, next best to winning? She said, well, losing. She had to gamble.
And you say she died penniless.
She was poverty-stricken.
And
she
a religious person.
Oh, yes, she died. She went back to the church. She was born a Roman Catholic. Went back to the church before she died. I suppose this must have been about when she was in her 90s. But she had a fabulous life. And as she said, I never regretted a minute of it. If I had to do it again, I would do the same thing all over again.
Had she, in the meantime, pawned everything?
Everything. By 1926, she was broke, and she lived until 1965. Her last affair was with an engineer from either Schenectady or Rochester, forgotten which. He had fallen in love with her, and of course, madly, as everybody fell in love with Otero, when he saw her in 1907. Then when he came back to World War I, was an engineer. With the Army Engineering Corps, he had, as he said, he got into the biggest crap game in the war and won $33,000. Went down to Nice to spend his holiday and saw Otero again after a lapse of 10 years. This time he propositioned her to have dinner with him, and he said he gave her the $33,000 willingly. And somebody asked him, he spent three nights with her, he said, somebody asked him, was it worth it? He said, yes, every penny.
We've been talking with Arthur Lewis about his book, La Belle Otero. This is Betty Grobley for Monitor.
Thank you. you could only be me. Hey, shouldn't that be I? Well, anyhow, it was the cousins.
We receive many warnings in our life, and sometimes they can save our life.
There are life preservers with an easy reach of each seat. But you can't...
Colin, you shouldn't touch those. Hey, Dad, did you see this on the pack? It says, caution, cigarette smoking may be hazardous to your health.
This message was brought to you by the American Cancer Society.
Mitchell and Theme from the Fox. NBC News on the Hour is next, and then I'll be back with more of Monitor. I'm Ted Steele.
We still have more to bring you. Just wait and see.
More news, more songs to sing you. More comedy.
If you think you may have arthritis, send for the Foundation's free new booklet, Today's Facts About Arthritis, and learn how severe crippling and disability can be prevented in 7 out of 10 cases by early diagnosis and proper treatment. Write to the Arthritis Foundation, 432 Park Avenue, New York, 10016, or call Lexington 21740. That number again, Lexington 24710.
This is Lee Leonard inviting the housewives of New York to close ranks and join forces with me, weekdays from 11 till 2 on WNBC. Every day is a battle against the mundane, the ordinary, the trite. So get in the fray with Lee's Army. You'll grant there's a difference in your day.
Monitor New York. Your weekend sound on WNBC New York.